Buddy.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Welcome, everybody. It's Monday, November 22nd, better known as Thanksgiving week, as some might refer to it as Turkey Week. Some of you already been out buying your groceries, getting aware of it, but you know what? This is the part that I just cannot get used to. We're already into November, Thanksgiving, which means that starts Christmas shopping, which means we're done with this year almost. It's crazy how fast this year is going. Time seems to be accelerating. Folks, you're listening to its first one-of-its-kind radio program produced by mortgage professionals for mortgage professionals, keeping you, the listener, informed on all that's going on in the mortgage industry. And we welcome you, listeners, from across the country. Many of you are listening on a streaming basis live. Some of you are downloading the program many times. We just found out an interesting statistic. This program is being downloaded as much as multiple times 2 and 3, 4 months out. Isn't that interesting? So we appreciate all of you who are listening to this, whether it be live, downloaded, and current, or well after the fact. You're also going to want to stay tuned to this program as we have Dennis Santiago, Chairman and CEO of the Institutional Risk Analytics Company, talking to us about so much related to analytics and risk related to our industry. If you have not already done so, go to Lickin' on Lending, www.lickinonlending.com, and register for our weekly emails announcing upcoming guests and programs. But as we do each and every week, let's go over to Joe Farr with MBS Quoteline to tell us all that's going on in the world of interest rates. Joe?
Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, Joe.
Dave, it's kind of quiet for a change. It's kind of nice. We're MBS prices are up about 6/32 right now from where they ended the day Friday. No real economic announcements. We should hear any minute now what the results of the 2-year Treasury auction were, but for mortgage people, the 2-year auction's not all that important, I guess, unless there were a signal being sent that people weren't going to buy our Treasuries anymore. That'd be a big deal, but so far, I'll let you know if we get that updated before I get off this segment. But, being quiet today is kind of nice after last week, and I'm going to start out by saying last week, the mortgage rates didn't change much, from Monday, our show Monday last week, to right now, mortgage rates may be just a little bit lower, just a touch lower. But, boy, that's not to say we didn't have a lot of movement last week. This was the first time I remember. We had 3 days last week where there were both favorable and unfavorable price changes on the same day.
Wow.
Monday started out, we were favorable, then unfavorable. Tuesday, we had two unfavorables followed by a favorable price change. And on Thursday, same thing, unfavorable, then favorable. And, that sort of brings to question why so much volatility.
Yeah.
And, we've been over this in the past, but pretty much it's just uncertainty. It gets down to people not really having a strong belief in one direction or another, and they react to economic events, they react to political events, they react to foreign events. The uncertainty starts with whether the economy is really improving or not. We hear stories where it is. This week's economic news or last week's economic news were kind of mixed, and we had a fairly strong retail sales when you include cars, and inflation measures were very low. In fact, historically low as far as CPI goes. But then the Philly Fed and the New York Empire Index were mixed. One was very positive, and the other was very negative. So just one of the uncertainties is are we really growing out of this thing? Then you add on to that, the whole issue on QE2.
Yeah, QE2. Yeah, that's huge.
Will foreign investors continue to buy our securities? Will QE2 create lots of inflation? Will there be a QE3? I just heard that this morning. That, who knows? But, you know, another factor right now that we really shouldn't lose sight of is that when you get into these holidays, like you talked about in the introduction, you really start seeing thinner trading. You know, there's just fewer people here. Lots of people have already set up their year-end positions. People are on vacation, taking their holidays. And so reaction in the market to movement or economic data or whatever can really be exaggerated. So it's not uncommon to see a lot of volatility at this time.
Well, things do get to settle down. It seems like it's settled down, but man, based on the volatility we've had here in the last weeks, a few weeks, I was going to say, but it seems like it's way beyond that. Just this whole second half of this year has been so volatile, you begin to wonder. Also the fact, Joe, with interest rates being this low, we've got to be at the lows, especially with QET going into effect. God forbid a QE3. I mean, it's got to put an absolute floor. So I think people are going, okay, it's heading up, but when and by how much? So anyway, sorry.
Well, that's a good commentary, and you know, there are a lot of people who, I mean, you got to ask yourself, would you like to have a 4% 30-year fixed rate mortgage-backed security for an investment? I mean, I guess you will if the economy tanks and deflation takes hold. So, you know, there are people out there that obviously are interested in making those investments. So.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
Let's talk about this week.
Let's talk about this week.
We have a short week. Closed on Thursday and closing early on Friday. Should be a full day on Wednesday, but again, especially on Wednesday, you can anticipate that there might be some pretty wide swings as the trading activity starts to wind down. There are auctions today and tomorrow and Wednesday. The ones today are just the 2-year auctions, so it's not as relevant to mortgages as the 5 and the 7 will be, and the 5 and the 7 are going to be announced at 1 o'clock Eastern times tomorrow and Wednesday. Fed meeting minutes come out tomorrow. That could be interesting given how much discussion there was among Fed members following the QE2 decision that was made at the last meeting. So maybe some insight and some market moving information inside the Fed minutes. And durable orders comes out October home sales, both existing and new home sales, will come out this week. Existing home sales is tomorrow at 10, and new home sales is Wednesday at 10. So some information this week. Could be a volatile week again. Just pay attention.
Pay attention, maybe a little thinner volume, but still some volatility. Thank you so much, Joe, for bringing it up. And what are you going to be doing for Thanksgiving? Come on, tell our listeners. What are you cooking?
I'm not cooking. We are actually. We're trying to fry a turkey for the first time. So, Dave, we're going to be kind of close to you up on Lake Travis. And if you see a great big explosion coming from the north part of Lake Travis...
You'll know the turkey fryer blew up. I do it outside. I've heard there's more fires from those, but they say a good, well-fried turkey is one of the most moist turkeys you could ever hope to have. Well, you have a great Thanksgiving.
Thank you.
One of the things I'm grateful for is having you on here in the program along with Alice and Andy and all our guests that we've been so fortunate. You have a great Thanksgiving. Stay tuned. We'll be right back, folks, after this brief break.
Economic uncertainty has created a tremendous amount of market volatility for the past few weeks. Intraday price changes seem the rule rather than the exception. Have you been surprised by a midday price change? Have you been frustrated as you locked a loan just ahead of a price movement? Found it difficult to explain to a customer why the rate you quoted is no longer available? MBS Quoteline can eliminate these frustrations. MBS Quoteline monitors Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Ginnie Mae mortgage-backed security prices in real time. It makes the information conveniently available on your desktop, smartphone, or by email or text message. These are the same prices used to set mortgage rates each morning and to issue midday price changes when significant movement occurs. With MBS Quoteline, you'll never be out of touch with the market, whether you're in the office or on the road. See for yourself what MBS Quoteline can do for you. Go to mbsquoteline.com to start a risk-free 2-week trial. mbsquoteline.com. 646-716-4972. The Lincoln on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lincoln.
Welcome back, everybody. And now we're going to discuss about new regulation that is coming out to regulate how you cook your turkey. And Alice has the latest updated information. With all the regulations out there, I know that sounds ridiculous, but you know what? I'm about ready to wonder if they're not going to try to regulate how we cook our turkeys. So
they were trying to regulate food being served in California, weren't they? So
they were.
Never know.
Golly, I can't wait to get into all that. But Alice, welcome to the program. Before we get started, what are you doing for Thanksgiving?
You know, Dave, I'm not cooking this year, and I have to tell you, just as a side note, my family believes that there should be a sitcom called Cooking with Al on the Food Network. So I have my share of mishaps in the kitchen.
Oh, that's funny.
So, yeah, well, we have a year's worth of episodes to air on that program.
Well, let's talk about what those turkeys are doing in Washington from a legislative standpoint, a regulatory standpoint, to mess with our industry. Talk to us. Feels like we're in the deep fat fire that Joe's got going out there as far as regulation.
Thank goodness they're out of town this week, so we get a break to try and focus on, you know, my biggest recommendation I have to make to people is get your act together before the end of the year on what we know already, and then you'll be at least, you know, halfway around the curve to start getting ready for all the new things as new answers come out in the beginning of the year. We do have a new publication that came in the Federal Register. HUD is asking for our opinion. You know, that's always a little dangerous. You want to kind of know what's going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, and they're not looking for expletives either. They're looking
right.
for
Right, right. Yeah. But this is really very – it's only a 10-page, you know, Federal Register posting. Actually, I don't think it's actually posted yet. We have Buckley Sandler was putting out their info bites, and they were announcing it, so is MBH NewsLinks, but letting us know that HUD is requesting information from the industry to ask about warehouse lending. If you recall, many, many, many months ago, we've been letting you know that HUD was looking for authority through a House bill to offer warehouse lending. Well, this list of questions that they're asking within this proposed rule almost comes across as kind of a little exploratory research thing. They've put it under a RESPA heading, but when you look at the series of questions, you kind of go, well, this isn't asking about rule making in terms of Section 8 and yield spread and all that. This is, they want to know how to do warehouse lending. So the questions are along the lines of, you know, what criteria will determine funding? What do you get into the underwriting? How do repurchases work? What are the general characteristics of warehouse lines? Very lengthy list of questions they're asking for feedback about. So if you're interested in that side of the work and telling HUD what they should do with that, then you can go and post your comments. I do have to give you a heads up on all the implementation dates we have right around the corner. The comment period is closing for the new look to the Truth in Lending form. That actually closes tomorrow. If you have objections or concerns, I think the main thing is check with your loan origination software provider. Are they going to be ready for this new form on time? And if you're getting the feeling that they're not, then that's the biggest reason to push back implementation on the new forms. So it will be a Truth in Lending form. The table format across the middle of the form will now get into all of the possible worst-case scenarios for ARMs. As an example, it'll also have a statement that there's no guarantee that we can refinance you. So check with your providers. If they seem prepared, then, you know, changing the look of the Truth in Lending form, your impact will be, does your staff know any impact it'll have on APR calculations and flagging finance charges? FHA's Lender Insurance Program comment rule changes are due December 7th. And this is the biggest change is looking at your compare ratio as a company. You will now be able to look at your compare ratio regionally as opposed to if you're a multi-state lender right now, you have to look and compare yourself to the national lenders. Spend some time looking at your default rates with FHA. Most of my customers I've talked to that are multi-state seem to be coming out a little bit better with this proposed rule to make this change. But make sure you check it out for your company. Comment period's going to close December 24th. You have a little bit of time to go check this one out. But the Fed is looking to change how we look at high-priced mortgage loans. I think the bigger issue in this one is that the customer would have a 3-day right of rescission for application fees. Now, we have enough to cope with timing requirements, and they want to add one more to the list. So check out that. It's Reg Z docket R1390. Comments are due in the next month, and make sure you understand that piece. Appraiser independence rules are going to go into effect next year, but that's technically they're accepting comments until December 27th. We have new transfer servicing disclosures that are going to be required January 1st, risk-based pricing disclosures to January 1st. Again, make sure your credit bureaus are ready to help you with that risk-based pricing disclosures. I've seen some stuff out from Kroll Factual Data. They're ready. They're giving people lots of information on how those new notice to home loan applicant disclosures will look. That will tell the customer, is your score comparative to people around the country, or might you have a lower score where your interest rate and loan terms may have changed? So that's the scoop where we stand today, Dave.
That's amazing. There's so much always. Every time I go back, I try to take notes, Alice, and I have to go back and download the program myself. So maybe I'm one of the ones that keep downloading the program as much. I know I'm not alone. There's literally hundreds of other people downloading the program after the fact. A lot to digest. If you haven't, folks, been able to digest this, you or any of the any aspect of the program, remember, you can go to our website, lickinonlending.com. Go in there and you'll see the programs, all the old programs. This program will be up there as soon as we're done. It'll show up as an archive program. You can download it and listen to it. We appreciate, again, so much the folks at Housing Matrix for doing a great job of hosting that program. And also head on over there and check out the tips, tools, and tricks that they have up there. Some great, valuable resources, and we appreciate them doing that. Alice, thank you so much. We'll be right back, folks, after this brief break.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality trainings throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals providing classroom and web-based delivery and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's David Lickin.
Welcome back, everybody. And normally each and every week we bring you a segment referred to as the Profit Doctor. But guess what? The Profit Doctor is in need of a doctor. Only for his health. His bottom line is absolutely strong, and he is continually doing so much to talk to everybody about helping them with their bottom line, bringing some great tips. I talked to him before the program, and his voice was down to about this, and he was going, Andy, save your voice. We love to have you on the program. But I said, what were you going to be talking about? And he said, you know what, Dave, and Joe and Alice, you're going to have to jump in and help me on this a little bit. He says, one of the things I'm thankful for is technology. He said, back in the old days, we used to work with these huge spreadsheets, you know, those columnar spreadsheets that could be seemed like 36 inches long. I don't think they were quite that long, but they were some pretty long ones. We taped them together, and we used to do all our budgeting and forecasting on those, and then you have to change one number, and you have to recalculate that. I mean, I remember doing that, and I'm not an accountant. I hated that. And now we've got spreadsheets. So you'd think we should be really grateful with the technology, and we should be utilizing these tools. Is that the way it works, do you think, Joe?
I remember those days well, and I got pretty good on a 10 key. Probably better on a 10 key than I am on a computer right now. But
you remember those days. I mean, were you doing it on a budgeting basis?
Yeah, and you'd do it by month, and then one or two things would change. You'd have to go back and use your eraser to change them all, But, you know, at some point, too, you can overdo it. And I think sometimes, you know, it's so easy. You know, you're expected to run all these scenarios and everything that you can spend more time budgeting than doing.
Really, I think, to Andy's point that he was trying to drive home, is why is more better? Well, we've got great information. You're getting it on a real-time basis. In fact, you can hit that recalc button and in seconds. Microseconds have the results and the data. Like Joe, you were saying, you take hours to recalculate the spreadsheet and God forbid you forget one number that was in there and you mess it up and you have to run a new tape. You know, the old 10-key adding machine. I remember guys that used to could just look at a spreadsheet, go down and get the input down right. I never did get that down to the point of that. Well, but here's the deal. We've got all this technology. We got more information. So why are we having this whole problem of not having good bottom line numbers, Joe? I mean, is it that we're spending too much time trying to analyze too much, or we're not looking at the information? You're a CPA. Come on, help out our ailing doctor with your opinion on this.
Geez, it could be any number of things, obviously. It's just, discipline in knowing what makes what creates profits for you and forcing the price to be what the price needs to be, or making sure that you're not, your compensation arrangements are fair and reasonable, and making sure that the purpose for what you do is to create profits, not so much to create volumes. And so I know Andy's talked about this in the past. It doesn't do you any good to do more of something that doesn't generate a lot of profit for you.
Well, and I would jump in here and say the two things people don't do, like you said, they can rely on the technology, but then not get their head out from the daily work. You know, you get so buried in trying to get loans closed and trying to manage fires that, you know, your efficiency in your operation is pulling away from your ability to look at the numbers. And then secondly, I find a lot of companies back into the numbers incorrectly. They're not looking at it from a top-down approach. They're looking at, what do I have to pay my loan officers to keep them happy? And then they're backing into everything from there. You know, it's just all wrong.
Well, it's the old inmates running the asylum. Yeah, we got the wrong perspective on this. So we come up with these spreadsheets. I think probably one of the most frustrating things that the profit doctor has to deal with is we build, and Alice, you've seen some of these on our clients we're sharing. We've got some really good, accurate, very granular spreadsheets that our clients, we build for our clients to have them move it. It's like giving a pilot a radar system so they can fly in weather. And that may not be as good where they can't see as clearly, and they choose to still fly by the seat of the pants, and they crash and burn. I mean, the reality is we create tools, and so the question is more better. And the answer, it isn't if you're looking at it. If it's an exercise you're going through just to get to some level of knowledge, then, it's an awareness thing, great. Just tuck it away. It's no different than you shutting off your nav system or shutting off your lights, driving it on a curvy road along the Southern California coast, Highway 1. Nothing curvier as you go up the coast of Highway 1 up north of San Francisco there, and driving it at night is absolutely nuts. And that's what I think we have so many people doing, is they're driving without having a good understanding of what's out there. So turn on your lights. Be thankful for the technology you have, I think is what Andy would be saying right now. And he would be telling you, pay attention to it. Use these tools. And then we have even more to be thankful, Joe. We're not having to deal with those long spreadsheets. Makes us thankful for that.
And no carbon paper.
How many times are we dealing with that? You mentioned carbon paper today at your average. Folks, when you go there, ask at the Thanksgiving table, how many people at the table know what carbon paper even is? You watch how few there are. It's a generational deal, for sure. Folks, we appreciate you staying tuned. We wish Andy and his family, he's cooking. He's not cooking the turkey. He doesn't like turkey. Did you believe that? That's almost un-American, isn't it? So he's going out and having some barbecue, I think is what he said he's going to do. But anyway, stay tuned, folks. We'll be right back after this guest, or after this quick brief word with our guest, Dennis Santiago. You're going to want to listen to this. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
It's time for the Mortgage Minute with Rob Katz of Del Mar DataTrack.
Did you happen to catch Paul Jackson's column from Housing Wire last week on rethinking how we are rewarding non-performing borrowers? He puts into print what most of us feel. That is, that borrowers who are not making their payments are being rewarded with reduced principal and lower interest rates, while those of us making our payments are getting no relief. Well, rather than just whine about it, Paul goes on to lay out a plan about how granting relief to performing borrowers would actually stimulate the economy and help to build jobs. It's a compelling argument and an article worth reading. You can find this story called A Surefire Stimulus, Rewarding Performing Borrowers, at HousingWire.com. This next highlight isn't mortgage related, and it has probably been around for a while, but I just came across it this morning and wanted to share it with you all. There's a blog site called Give More that is packed with tools and advice to help inspire people at work and life. And they have a posting called Cross the Line that you really need to read. Not only should you read it, but you should share it with all of your staff. I'll just get you started with the first couple of sentences and then let you discover the rest on your own. With everything, there's a line. On one side of the line is a greater chance to make good things happen. Better results, better relationships, more responsibility. This is where you'll find all those people you admire. On the other side, there's less of a chance. You can find this posting at blog.givemore.com and search for Cross the Line. It's a short read, very inspiring. Hey, those are the stories that caught my attention this past week for the Mortgage Minute. This is Rob Katz with DMD, and I'll be back next week with the news I think you should know about.
This has been the Mortgage Minute with Rob Katz of Del Mar Data Track. Catch Rob's news of the week right here on the Lincoln on Lending Show or online at dmdinc.com. Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Dave Licken with Licken on Lending. It's Monday, November 22nd, and we're very, very fortunate to have Dennis Santiago, Chairman and CEO of Institutional Risk Analytics, located in Torrance, California, here with us as a special guest. He has probably one of the most unique resumes and backgrounds of any guest we've had on this program to date. Dennis, in 1981, worked in the aerospace industry as a military operation research analyst. That kind of sounds like rocket scientist. And if you question it, he was with Rockwell International. And Dennis is going to get in and tell us all about it. In 1991, he got in and made a transition. He did a deal with this little-known company out there called Countrywide back in 1991. We're going to give us a little background on that. He made the transition to the finance industry, and as a result, it's a slippery slope. Anyone who's gotten close to the mortgage industry, it seems like we slip right in, and we're there for the rest of our careers. It's a great place to be. That's why I'm such an advocate for the mortgage industry, and Dennis has just done a great job of developing some analytical tools. He's the architect of a lot of the tools that they use, all the tools that they use at his company. They have the a bank monitoring system, a corporate monitoring system, an SEC catalog. He holds a Bachelor of Science of Electrical Engineering. It's a BSEE. Dennis, you're going to have to help me if I got that wrong, from University of California at Irvine. He also has an MBA from UCLA Anderson Graduate School of Management. Dennis Santiago, welcome to the program. So good to have you here.
Oh, thank you. Nice to be here.
Well, we're pleased to have you, and a lot of people go, analytics, that sounds boring. Well, after I can tell you, listeners, after talking to Dennis, when I did the pre-show program with him, I knew this was going to be anything but boring. Dennis, you have a way of making things rather interesting. But let's start off by telling the listeners about Institutional Risk Analytics. And how did you make that transition from aerospace again to the mortgage industry?
Well, it's kind of interesting. I went and got myself an MBA and found myself being more interested in things financial and business than in things having to do with bending tin for airplanes. And it turns out, you know, the equations for doing things like analyzing military stability and nuclear warfare have the same kinds of statistics that are used for doing things like calculating prepayment models and setting down mortgage-backed securities tranches. So the math was the same, and I just kind of applied it in a different direction.
So when we're out there saying to our clients that this isn't exactly rocket science, maybe we may have to adjust that statement a little bit. We've got someone who is in analytics and aerospace saying that, you know what, a lot of it applied. So is it easier or less, or is it something that's very similar?
There are some differences. I mean, you know, what you're dealing with in finance is probably a bit more structured, a bit easier to work with than say the kinds of scenarios that you deal with in military analysis. But risk analysis is the same regardless of where you do it, and whether you're doing it for say economics or for strategic missile defense, or whether or not you know your counterparty is somebody you want to be doing business with, it's still pretty much the same kinds of equations. The math is pretty universal in that regard.
Yeah, I think of that. So tell us about how you made the transition. I know you said you started when we were on the pre-call just before the radio program started. You said that you made that transition as a result of an engagement with Countrywide. It was certainly a lot smaller back then. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it's kind of an interesting thing. So it's December 1991. I got a call from a friend of mine who said, "Hey, did you know that because Drexel Burnham Lambert went bankrupt, that I was able to buy their structured finance software package from them, and I made it work again, and there's somebody that wants to use it. Could you install it for me?" And I said, "What's structured finance?" I had no idea what it was at the time. He says, "Well, it's pretty similar to the stuff that you're doing. It's an old buddy of mine." And he said, "Can you install it for me? Because I'm out in New York and you're out in California." So I said, "Sure, no problem." He sent me a tape and a computer. And between Christmas and New Year's Eve of that year, he said, "Go to this address in Pasadena, California." And I said, "What's the name of the bank?" He says, "That's a little bank out there that does mortgages called Countrywide." And essentially we installed the thing in there and got them going. At the time, what they needed was a way to securitize their own shelf, because every time they would take their mortgage packages, they're not basically the stuff they couldn't do Ginnie Mae and Fannie Mae with, and took it to the street, they would take it all and keep all the money.
Wow.
So there's got to be a better way to do this.
Yep.
And so it was a good idea at the time, and it kind of turned over the years into a bigger and bigger machine, and I think at a certain point they lost control of it.
Well, tell us a little bit. Yeah, they obviously lost control of it in a number of ways. But let's talk about specifically some of the things that you're analyzing. Last week we had a program dedicated, a hot topic dedicated to working with banks, either being owned by a bank, acquiring a bank, or forming some type of affiliation. So a lot of people are wanting to go and monitor the various banks that are out there. And listeners, I apologize. We got some static on the line here, and I apologize for we're trying to locate that and deal with it. But, Dennis, tell us a little bit about the bank monitoring that you're doing there.
Oh, sure, yeah. What we do, what Institutional Risk Analytics actually does, is it analyzes banks very much the same way that the bank regulators do. So we compute the risk that they have. We compute shadow camels. We compute bank stress indicators, kind of like the stress test that you hear about. And we compute counterparty quality scores that are used by people that, you know, kind of want to figure out whether or not to give the bank good terms, or from a vendor standpoint, whether, you know, they got to pay cash.
Yeah.
And some people actually do that these days. And the people that use it do surveillance on the banks just to keep up with them. It's all done with public data. We actually run all 15,000 banking institutions, which consists of about 7,000 or so individual bank units and another 4,500 or so bank holding companies. And we crank all those out every month or every quarter, twice a quarter, once at the beginning for preliminaries. We do that for our professional customers. And then for everybody else, we do it towards the end of the quarter with a master file that comes from the FDIC. The stuff actually goes. You can buy it on the internet. You can actually get these bank reports, and you can pay for them with PayPal, of all things.
Wow.
I did it on a dare, actually, from a reporter at CBS who said, you know, "What are you going to do to help regular Americans understand what's going on with banking?" And I said, "Well, you know, these call reports are extremely detailed." And he said, "Well, they'll never figure that out." So He says, what's your solution? I go, A through F, kind of like going into a restaurant, you know, do you want to eat there or not? And he said, how quickly will it take you to make it? And I said, I don't know. He says, well, can you hurry up? So he did it in about 2 months. And then
so
the system's been online
for about
a couple
that
of years
digests,
now.
You created a product that digests and monitors 15,000 institutions, and you're being able to bring that out in a meaningful way. That's amazing. Alice, you work with regulators and are doing reports on that. I know you've got some questions.
Well, yeah, Dennis, welcome to the program. We, we do a lot of work with banks of all sizes, and so when regulators talk about bank risk, what should people understand that they really mean by that? Because there definitely are different types of risks that, depending on the size and the entity that we think that they look at. But from your viewpoint, what do the regulators look for with it when they define bank risk? What do they mean?
Well, ultimately, when a regulator is looking at bank risk, what they're actually talking about is protecting the bank insurance fund, which is the master fund that backs up all the banks. This came out of the Great Depression, actually, and the bank failures from that era. We put a system into place in this country that is supposed to stabilize these institutions. That's why you see when they fail, they generally are bought by another bank. So what the bank regulators do is they transfer the assets of one bank into a one that can actually hold the capacity. Now, for the most part, that kind of works, but sometimes it does kind of cause some pretty big indigestion. And probably the biggest pieces of indigestion now that the public watches is probably a Bank of America eating Countrywide.
That's so important that you bring up that aspect of it, that it's about protecting the insurance fund. It's not necessarily giving information for us, you know, who are in the industry on just loan quality or what might, if the risk is right for Bank of America, then the risk should be okay then for ABC Community Bank.
Oh, it's not. As a matter of fact, one of the things that one of the great misnomers of banking is that all banks are alike. And I can tell you just by looking at all the banks all together that they are entities unto themselves. They have personalities kind of like a big family with little kids, and not a single one of them is alike. And you can go from bank to bank to bank, and each one is a case study in and of itself. And that's something that people, I think, really need to realize is when you look at a bank, don't just assume that they're those granite towers that we all grew up believing. That's really not the way it is. It's actually never been the way it is. And but I think people are just beginning to learn that at this point, every bank needs to be looked at a lot more carefully, and that's kind of what we try to do. Is we bring out all the measures out of this. The typical call report's got 3,300 data variables in it, and when you add all the complex data that the FDIC recomputes on top of it, you're talking about 5,000 variables. It's far beyond what anybody can eat. And we simplify. We simplify for a lot of people, actually, including some of the other regulators, the non-bank regulators. SEC is a big client of ours.
So that's where your aerospace background comes into play. That's a lot of data points to be working with. Joe used to be at a bank, a bank-owned mortgage company, and I'm sure he's got some fresh perspective on it. Joe?
Well, a question regarding the measurement of risk. I think of banks as being asset-oriented and mortgage banks as being operationally oriented. And so I can understand how your measures would pertain to the assets-oriented. Do you have ways to measure the risks associated with mortgage operations and the operational aspects of things?
Oh, sure, yeah. Among the many things that we measure, it's actually, in banking, it's not just first of all, banks are backwards from everything else, and assets are actually what we think of as liabilities, and liabilities are actually what we think of as assets. But we measure both the we do asset testing, we do liabilities testing, which are tests on the deposits. On the asset side, we concentrate very heavily on things these days like troubled assets, the loans that are non-paying, and both the 1-4 residential and also the commercial real estate loans. We also track what's going on in terms of their C&I lending, because in many cases, commercial and industrial lending is actually backed by real property. And we track in terms of the banks themselves, both their on-balance sheet exposure, and in particular whether that exposure is degrading, because that actually is one of the measures that the regulators are issuing a lot of new regs on, mortgage renegotiations, stuff like that, are very, very big, you know, with HAMP and all that kind of stuff. And also foreclosures and that type of stuff. There are actually new variables that are going to have to report beginning in March 2011, having to do with providing more detail on that kind of stuff.
But what about mortgage operations? And are you looking at loan quality and measuring that risk, or pull through those kinds of things?
Well, what we do there is we take a regulatory perspective on it, as opposed to going deep into the mortgage pipeline portion of things. We do watch the flow of mortgages to securities and that type of stuff to see whether or not those pipelines are in fact operating. And you know, for the most part, mm-hmm. to tell you the truth, that's kind of a boring thing to watch right now, because most of those pipelines aren't really doing that much.
Yeah, I was going to say that's not the most active area right now, but that we know it's going to be coming back. So are you going to be able to give us any predictability, Dennis, on where you see that coming back or when you see that coming back? Are there any other indicators that you're tracking, doing analysis of, analytics on, that might give indication when they're going to come back?
One of the things that we're watching in particular right now, particularly when it comes to mortgages, you know, we're obviously in the middle of a correction having to do with troubled mortgages. And that process continues to go. I mean, you know, we're not, I wouldn't say we're even halfway through that whole process right now. And so we're watching that. One of the things that we're watching in particular is that we see banks essentially becoming unwilling real estate investment trusts, because as these mortgages fail, they try to keep them on the books as long as possible, and you know, they may turn them back into some sort of corrected mortgage for the time being. But you know, even then, with the economy being down, the rate at which these mortgages will refail is still pretty high, and essentially somewhere along the way they become REO, and it's a bank becomes a REIT. And and not a happy one at that, because that's not really the business that they were born to be.
Unwilling. So, folks, we're going to be right back after this break. We have Dennis Santiago with us, Chairman and CEO of Institutional Risk Analytics. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief word.
In today's climate, quality counts more than ever, and Wetzel's Trot can help your company maintain the quality that you require to survive in an ever-changing market. With over 450 customers across the country, Wetzel's Trot has specialized in quality control reviews for residential lenders since 1985. Wetzel's Trot can assist your organization in maintaining a high standard of quality within your residential mortgage operation. They offer a wide variety of services, including loan quality control, servicing quality control, quality control plans, fraud review services, and even web-based quality control software. Quality is never an accident. It is always the result of high intention, sincere effort, intelligent direction, and skillful execution. Choosing Wetzel's Trot represents the wise choice of many alternatives. Contact Wetzel's Trot today for details at 248-592-2252. Wetzel's Trot, the single source solution for your quality control needs.
PMI Mortgage Insurance Company is the clear choice for your higher LTV conventional borrowers. Unlike FHA, PMI offers a choice of flexible premium plans to fit the individual needs of each borrower. From a one-time upfront cost with no renewal premium to a monthly plan with no upfront charges, PMI's premium plans recognize larger down payment and good credit history, saving your clients what can at times be thousands of dollars. PMI also provides lenders with fast electronic submission tools to increase efficiencies. Mortgage insurance is more relevant than ever, so it's important to utilize a mortgage insurer who's committed to the business for the long term. It is vital that you work with a company whose core competency is credit risk management, and bring that wealth of knowledge to your firm. At PMI, mortgage insurance is their only business, so they have to get it right.
PMI's mission is to create sustainable homeownership opportunities. To learn more about how PMI solutions can assist your business, please contact your PMI representative today or call 800-966-4PMI, 800-966-4PMI.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Dave Licken with Licken on Lending. We have a special guest, Dennis Santiago, Chairman and CEO of the Institutional Risk Analytics from Torrance, California. We're getting into a really interesting discussion. If anyone could make analytics interesting, Dennis is certainly doing it. The thing that captured my attention was tracking 15,000 institutions are bringing back analytics about it. But let's talk about the real estate world for a minute. How does this, all this, affect what's going on in the mortgage markets? You started touching on it, but could you go a little bit deeper for us, Dennis?
Oh, sure, yeah. You've got interesting times here in the mortgage markets. You've got, I think, probably the most interesting thing of all is the various initiatives that are going from mergers and acquisitions of banks, with larger regional banks coming in, I mean, medium-sized regional banks coming in to challenge the large banks reacting to their own inventories of mortgages that they are dealing with, plus including risks that they've got as they may have to buy some of these mortgages back from the GSEs because the GSEs are at this point starting to look into whether or not some of these mortgages are faulty, and they've got a right to say you got to buy it back, which could put more pressure on the large banks, for instance, on their balance sheets, because now they got these loans that are going to start to go down the bad path. And then you've got local initiatives that are cropping up all over the country where individual communities are now trying to affect what's going on with not just home ownership, but also industrial development in their own areas. And you've got there's a lot of stuff going on. And if you look at it totally, I think what you're seeing is the United States is beginning to react to the credit crisis that it hit, in terms of where it started in finance and then hit harder into mortgages and eventually into unemployment. And we're experimenting with ways to get around it.
What about the troubled assets that we've talked about? What effect are they having on the bank lending practices from what you're seeing from an analytical standpoint?
Oh, the word, there's a catchphrase for it. It's called flight to quality. And flight to quality, you hear it all over the place. And what you're seeing are banks. Interestingly enough, the larger banks are continuing to try to lend a little bit more. The rates are higher. Because they have to basically they're basically giving you a line of credit, but the smaller banks for the most part are they're hiding, they're not lending, and they're holding back on issuing new loans. I've seen a number of them that are really only lending to existing customers, and it's a bit troublesome because you've got the formula of you got to get your industrial base back up in order to create jobs so people can afford homes. That whole pipeline, even larger pipeline than just, say, a mortgage pipeline, is in trouble right now, and we still haven't really found an effective solution to it.
I want to toss it back to Joe for a minute. I'd love to get your thoughts also on QE2, quantitative easing 2, if you think that's going to have any effect. But, Joe, why don't you take the mic for a minute?
Yeah, Dennis, one of the biggest issues from a risk perspective to the mortgage industry, I think, is sitting out there in the form of Fannie and Freddie and whether or not they're going to continue in existence, or I guess we know they're not, but how will they be replaced? So as you're talking to people, especially banks that have mortgage operations, what kind of advice are you giving them as to how to manage or monitor or quantify the risk associated with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac?
Well, one of the things that I think banks are worrying about is that if there is no pipeline that you can send these mortgages to, and clearly on the conforming side, if these agencies are not able to take volume in the same numbers that they were at before, and certainly on the Wall Street side, the non-conforming stuff in terms of private mortgage-backed securities and stuff, that whole pipeline is in trouble also. You've got banks that are sitting there going, am I going to have to carry this all on balance sheet? And that's part of the reason that you've got a flight to quality. They're kind of fearful that they're going to have to hold this stuff.
Yeah.
There's no question. Go ahead, John. Sorry.
Well, I was just going to get into, we talked a little bit earlier about counterparty risk, and you know what this industry kind of woke up to is that they're sometimes originators or counterparties they really didn't realize they were. They were relying on counterparties that aren't there anymore. So you mentioned that you have some tool to help people measure counterparty risk.
Yes, we're coming out with a tool now that measures the counterparty risk of banks, and it's one of those simplified 8-to-1 scale things built around a Wall Street construct. We're working with some companies that are actually in New York that do this, that found that their traditional credit risk analysis tools were not working when it came to banks, and so they came to us and said, you know, can you test out an alternative model that will fill in that square, because it's kind of critical right now. And my reaction to it was, yeah, it's not quite watching the grass grow like it was a few years ago, is it?
That's so true. Alice, there's some other questions I know that you've got down the area of best practices related to mortgages.
Yeah, are there any practices in the area of mortgages in particular that are worth spending a few minutes on? You know, what are some of the specific things that you're watching, such as borrowers walking away from houses, distressed assets, and so forth?
Oh yeah, there's some really interesting things going on there, and in particular with community banks. I mean, you know, we started to see this obligor walkaway problem turn up about maybe a year and a half ago, and it continues to grow, and it's one of the biggest risks that banks fear, particularly if they have a lot of commercial real estate outstanding, because those are the kinds of things where it's a business decision as to whether or not to bail on it. So people are now trying to push for things like getting owner-occupied commercial property because the timing is good for it. One of the really interesting things when it comes to home mortgages is that there are some community banks that are actually renegotiating those mortgages, and they're finding that if they renegotiate them properly, they get very high performing rates. One bank, small bank, redid almost all of its loans and reported back to me, this is much to their amazement, they have 100% performance.
You mean on the commercial, right?
Talking about residential.
Residential?
Yeah, in troubled parts of metropolitan areas, too. But apparently there are some bankers that are trying to figure out that formula, and for some of them it's working.
That's very interesting. So they went back to every one of their customers and reworked the loan voluntarily, even a performing loan.
Yep. If anybody asked them, could I please redo this? They said sure, and now they've got performing customers, which means that they've got a better relationship with their people, better relationship with their community. Their CRA scores go way up. I mean, there's all kinds of good things happening to them. And I don't know if that wave will catch on with the larger banks as they get bigger, because the numbers and the sizes of the pools that they have to watch just becomes it expands exponentially. But to a certain extent, there are people out there that are proving that there are ways to make this work.
We are just getting so short on time here. I want to ask one question. There's a lot of stuff in the economy that we're trying to react to, that we're trying to deal with. Is there any way out of this whole mess, Dennis?
Yeah, I think there is. I mean, when all is said and done, what you're really seeing here isn't that we don't understand the magnitude of the problem. We do, and it's very, very large. And the way out of this is really it's a metering. So you've got the federal government and even now state and local governments that are trying to find ways to make it so that the trouble that we need to work our way out of is run through the system in such a way that it's not too large and too small. It's kind of like, the mama bear approach. And because if it's too small, the problem will continue to snowball out of it. If it's too big a correction at once, it's too much of a shock to the system. And so, it's tumultuous as people debate how to make it work. But what they're really debating on right now is at what speed and in what areas to make anything go through at any given time. And it's not a quick fix. But it's remember, guys, it took us well over a decade and a half to make this mess.
Yeah, to make this mess, we're certainly going to be not out of it. And there's no quick fixes, as you said. Dennis, what a joy it is to have you. And, again, I apologize to our listeners for the static we've got on our connection here with Dennis. It's just one of those things you get to live with tech. We try to do as much as we can. We're doing so much, but sometimes you just get the static. But, Dennis, what an outstanding guest you've been. We'd love to have you back, talk more about it, especially as you see opportunities to bring stuff to our audience. Please alert us to it. How can they learn more about your company and yourself? Give us the website.
The best way to do it, to start to get to know us, is just to either Google or just type in institutionalriskanalytics.com into your web browser, and from there it'll just kind of open up to an entire universe of ways to look at banks.
Well, folks, I encourage you to go out there. Again, that's institutionalriskanalytics.com. You go out there, you're going to see a vast amount of information. Dennis, thank you so much for being with us on the program. We just really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy day. And if you haven't checked out, check out some of his blog posts that are up there. There's some great information. Again, Dennis, thank you so much. Hope we'll have you back soon.
Take care.
You bet. Happy Thanksgiving to you.
You
folks, we're just so excited to be able to bring this to you, this program, each and every week. Again, this is a first of its kind in the industry, trying to bring together important, really interesting guests like Dennis Santiago, Chairman CEO of Institutional Risk Analytics. For some reason, my mouth is just not wanting to get that out. Maybe it's because I'm just probably about the opposite of analytical on this. So anyway, but Dennis, it was a treat to have you here. Allison, Joe, we're going to be on next week, and we're going to be talking about loan officer compensation. We, as a consulting firm, Alice as a training firm, and then Joe out there working with so many thousands of companies on providing rates, it is one of the most hotly talked about what are you doing kind of things, and we're thrilled to be able to bring you next week a segment on it. We're so excited. You're not going to want to miss this. Alice and Joe, is there any comments that you want to bring out for our listeners, especially as a teaser for next week as we get close to wrapping up this program?
Well, we're going to be looking at different compensation plans that we've heard about and really just not trying to present the legal side of it, but more of the discussion of pros and cons. And like, you know, Dennis was just alluding to, every institution has its own personality, so there really isn't a one-size-fits-all. So we hope to kind of bring people, you know, some of the issues you have to weigh, the pros and cons of all the different loan officer compensation ideas that are floating around right now.
Well, there's certainly a lot floating around out there. And, Joe, I know you're running across those questions. People, your clients are asking you, what are people doing out there? Am I correct?
Yeah, and, you know, so often you hear them say, well, what are the big guys going to do? And the big guys are going to plod along, and they're going to figure out what they're going to do. But if you wait until that happens, may not have a whole lot of time to adjust what your systems are geared up to do. So, you know, there are people that are – yeah, there are people that have, are figuring out ways to essentially pay the same comp as has been paid in the past, but just maybe in a little different time period or a little, certainly within the regulations, and others are planning to use the changing laws to totally revamp, you know, how they pay people.
Their whole system, yeah. But you're definitely going to tune in next week, folks, to listen to this really good discussion on this. Also, I encourage you to tune in to Fox Business next week tomorrow at 11:30 Eastern Time. I'm going to be on a panel, and I'll be discussing how do we get out of this mess. So I'm going to be spending some time on Dennis's website reading some of his content for that. Also, I want to wish you all, our listeners, a very happy Thanksgiving, and we appreciate you being a part of this broadcast each and every week. Pass it around, and be sure to head over to LickitOnLending.com, register for weekly updates, and we look forward to talking to you next week about loan officer compensation. Have a great turkey day, everybody. Blessings to you.
This has been Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. On the web at www.mortgagebankingsolutions.com. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, delivering live mortgage-backed security prices as trades happen, and Alice Albee, President CMB of Mortgage U, your ultimate education and information resource. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.